This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome inside the Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective. I am JT. Joining me, as always, my partner from down south, Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
New year, new us.
That's it.
We celebrated our 7-year friendiversary the other day. Did you see that on your Facebook?
I did. In our almost our six-year meet-iversary. Oh no, never mind. We met at WrestleMania. I was thinking Pittsburgh, but. Almost.
Well, no. Well, that was the last time we met was 6 years ago, God, which is kind of crazy. Yeah, it's been a while. I was thinking about that the other day, too. So a lot of fond memories. I mean, I think once you know somebody for 7 years, they really kind of start to transition from the friends that kind of come and go to the ones you're going to be kind of stuck with for a while.
Guess you're stuck with me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But no, it's crazy to think. I mean, yeah, I guess we would have started talking right after we did that Big Boys play, right?
Yeah. I know one of the earliest times we talked was during the Notre Dame-Alabama National Championship game where Alabama creamed Notre Dame, and we talked about Scott crying in the corner.
Because we hadn't really talked before the Big Boys, right? Because Parv organized that?
Yeah, Parv set up everything. I never had messaged you online or anything until we recorded.
Right. And that was December.
Where the Big Boys play. Yeah, that was a couple days after Christmas. Yeah.
Okay.
So December 29th.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So we would have started in early January, and then we roomed together 3 months later. So.
Yeah, it was a very quick relationship.
Escalated fast to share a hotel room.
Yeah, we beat the odds.
We did.
Those usually flame out fast, but still going strong.
It was Xavier. If we didn't meet Xavier, that would have been it.
Yeah, that was still true. That's still crazy.
Power of Prince Devitt. Anyway, so anything going on in your life?
No, do you do any New Year's resolutions?
No, I am not a fan of New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, I'm kind of not either.
I'm an all year resolution. Well, I did, you know, it's funny because my wife said it like in front of the kid, you know, kind of like, what's yours? And I'm like, well, I kind of started mine in September with the keto stuff. So I'm like, I've been doing my New Year's resolution for, you know, 4 months or whatever. So
right.
I'm just going to go with that. But no, I was thinking today of, I wasn't going to tell the story, but then I realized, I think it was one of our very first or earliest episodes where we talked about me going back to Cox Cable.
Oh yeah. All right. Come full circle.
Yeah. Cause that's coming to an end this weekend. So my contract's not up. It's up in August, but after my 1 year, back in September, it went up $20 and I'm like, fine. You know, I knew that going in, and I've been like I've been questioning myself lately. Like as I watch TV, I'm like, when I'm sitting here watching TV, I'm like, what am I really watching on Cox? I'm like, we DVR some stuff, but I really mainly watch sports and like WWE Network. And then now with like Disney Plus and stuff, like I don't watch a ton of random TV. At the most, I'll put on like The Office on Comedy Central, you know, just to kill time. So It's been hanging over me anyway. And I figured when the time came, I'd probably bag it because the guy basically told me when I called a few months ago to talk about something, he's like, yeah, you're not going to be happy when your contract's up because basically, like, you're not getting what you had and it's going to go up. Like, he was on it. Like, he basically just said that. I'm like, okay. So it's kind of been in my head, like, all right, I guess I'm out. So then the other day, I noticed, I'm trying to think of how I noticed. I think I went on to pay, or there was something. I realized that they had debited me twice in December. And I remembered when I went to go pay on the app, I get an error message and I put it through again because I didn't think it went through. They returned the payment, no problem, on their own. But they charged me a $25 like return payment fee. And I'm like, well, what the fuck is this? So now I had a call. I'm like, you debited me twice, returned the money, and then charged me $25 because I paid. Like, I paid on time. So, like, okay. Like, they didn't bust my balls. They're like, okay, we can return it. So then they give me the dollar amount. And they're like, all right, well, here's your bill. And I'm like, well, it's still higher. I'm like, it's like $5 higher than it was. Like, why? And they're like, oh, well, you know, the annual rate increase. Like, they can't even explain it. They're like, oh, it's out of our control, which I know it is. I think it's like the FCC bullshit or whatever. But for whatever reason, it really set me off. I'm like, I am now $25 more than I had signed up for 2 years ago. And there's always this, like, I'm like, every other month I get a call for some fucking fee. I'm like, I'm not even watching this shit. So I hung up, and I remember Todd was talking a lot about YouTube TV. So I did the free trial, and I'm messing around with it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm fucking done. So I checked with Cox, and they said I could break my contract for $60. So I'm like, okay. So I'm thinking it over. And I looked at YouTube TV, plus if I could get like good internet at a decent price, I could save about $90 a month. So I'm like, I'll make money month one, even paying the fee to break. So yep. I'm like, I'm just going to do it. So I call Cox back, and I'm like, what is the cost? I call like the retention department just to see if they would like make me a pitch to stay. So I'm like, you know, I'm considering bailing. Here's why. I'm like, how much would it be if I just went with internet? And she's like, just internet would be $130. And I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? Like $130. I'm like, you nuts? I'm like, fuck that. So then she's like, well, I can give you a credit. Whatever the fuck she said, like some credit. And she's like, it would be $220 a month. And I'm like, I was paying $218 before this $5 increase. I'm like, you're like, it's just still going up even with this offer. I'm like, I laughed at her. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I'm like, yeah, I'll stay for a $2 increase. I'm like, I'm calling you to save money. So I call Verizon back now. And, because I'm technically a new customer now, cause I haven't been with them for like 4 years, and they gave me their highest speed internet locked in for 3 years, $79.99 for like the Gigablast internet, whatever the fuck it is.
That's good.
And a $250 Visa gift card. So,
oh, that's good too.
That'll help me. So I am there coming Saturday to put the internet in, and I will promptly immediately call Cox after that to cancel and then go drop their trash off. And I have signed up for YouTube TV. So going back to cord cutting.
There we go. So please don't message him any sports updates.
That's it. I deal with minute lag. That is going to be the toughest. That is going to be the toughest. Like I was thinking,
The toughest. That's really the only thing that sucks for me. Is like last night when we were watching the Providence game, you were ahead of me.
Right.
So, like, I mean, it's about a minute delay. But, I mean, I justify that by, like, I mean, a lot of the time I'm not able to watch sports live anyway or, like, real time because they come on right as the kids are going to bed. So if I want to watch the whole game, I usually have to start at, like, 8:30 or whatever. So, I mean, I'm not watching live anyway, so.
Well, and I justify it by saying I'm going to save $1,000 over the course of the
year.
Well,
that's true, too. I mean, yeah, I mean, like, is it worth an extra
$90 a month?
Like, when I cut, yeah, I mean, mine was probably, like, 70 is what I'm saving per month. Because I think with our DirecTV, we're probably, like, at 125. And right now with the YouTube, we're at 55. So, yeah, I mean, like, $70. So.
Yeah, the worst. Well, I mean, I think for fantasy, it kind of sucks, right? Because if you're watching your fantasy team like in real time, like I do, if you keep updating, you're going to see the updates before it happens.
I think like the ESPN app was even ahead of like my DirecTV. Oh, okay. No, like it would pop up, and then and, you know, like 2 seconds later, you'd see the ball. Like it wasn't a minute, but like they just had hiked the ball, and all of a sudden I got like 7 points. So it's like, well, we know where that's going.
I think the two that bugged me the most last time were PC games, because I do have a big group chat with all my fellow season ticket holders and buddies that are PC fans, and we like talk like during all the road games. The home games doesn't matter because I'm there, so it's really just half the games. And then the Yankee playoff games was rough a few years ago.
Yeah,
I hated being behind in the playoffs, and I ended up like listening on the radio because it was aggravating me so much. That was one of the reasons I went back, honestly. It was because of those games.
Yeah, that was tough during the Braves playoffs this year. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, It comes and goes, and I will say, like, even with the cord cutting stuff, they're starting to get a little ridiculous, too. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, like, Hulu started out when they rolled out their live in January last year. I think it was, like, $39.99 or $34.99, and they've done bumped up to $54.99. So right. You're talking 25-28% increase in a year, so it's getting a little ridiculous. And even them, like, when they announced their price change, one, I don't like that you're never grandfathered in on some mm-hmm. of the stuff. And two, like, they basically said, like, well, you know, you have to decide yourself as a family whether you want TV every month or if you just want to, like, get it a couple months a year. I was like, what is this?
What the fuck does that mean? Yeah.
Like, we're making this a luxury to have live TV. It was a kind of a weird marketing ploy.
Right.
Where they were essentially saying, well, we're raising it on you, but, you know, maybe y'all should cancel and come back. You know, I didn't get it.
Well, they know no one's actually going to do that, so they probably
yeah,
it out.
Yeah. Well,
the one of the things I will say when I had Sling was they did grandfather. I was in on the ground floor with that pretty much.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. YouTube, they kept me at the old one. That. Mm-hmm. So YouTube kept their grandfathered rate for a while, but then it eventually they were like, "No, you're out." So.
Right. Well, I was excited they got the local stuff. Not that I watch a lot of local things, but for sport, like for football and stuff, I do, obviously. So I get those channels.
Yeah.
So that was big. Sling did not have those in the past. I struggled a lot.
Yeah, Hulu has that as well, so I do like that. Yep.
The only thing I think with YouTube, the one channel was Comedy Central, which is like the one random one I'll put on a lot, like I said, just for The Office and stuff, to watch it when it's on, or random movies.
Yeah.
And my wife for Hallmark, but and MTV's not on there for Jersey Shore. So I just downloaded those apps and I'll just grab a cable ID from someone and watch through the apps individually. But I think overall, I don't think I'll miss much. Honestly, like, I watch so much just like W Network is like my background noise at all times. And beyond that, it's like random sports stuff. I watch a handful of shows, but all those are archived right away anyway. And with YouTube TV, you got the DVR. So I'm like, whatever. We don't watch very much live. Outside of sports, like, we don't watch anything live. Really,
yeah.
And wrestling, to me, I don't care if it's a minute delay. Like, at this point, it's not like there's anything huge going on week to week on Raw or whatever. I'm gonna be spoiled big time by a minute.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. I mean, my thought is whatever. I can always, for Verizon, I'll be a new customer for cable. So if by football season I hate it, like, I can just freaking go back to Verizon and probably get a bundle for 2 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So before we get into our show tonight, just one last thing we wanted to cover. That is our new stretch project here. On the site, kicked off January 2nd, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I think I was in New Orleans, so yeah, January 2nd.
The old project closed out on December 31st. That was the greatest WWE TV pay-per-view match ever project. So we are tabulating those, and those lists will be going out soon. But we wanted to get a real early jump on this next project for 2020 because we want to really promote content and discussion, and it's been awesome so far. Like, I've been so happy with how this has started, and that is the greatest WCW TV pay-per-view. We'll just call it WCW match ever because I don't think there's much, like, no one's going to be dominating house show matches probably. That didn't
There's like a tag from I mean, we can just say WCW match.
Yeah, I think it's fine to say matches. I mean, like, with WWF, we had to kind of qualify because there's so many house shows for so many years that shit was going to get thrown out if we didn't. But for WCW, pretty much we decided to go to the disgruntledness of Lee West. We're going from 1981 to 2001. So a 20-year period covering really, you know, some Mid-Atlantic, Crockett, and then WCW in earnest in 88.
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, I know it's confusing because, like, Georgia Championship Wrestling was on WTBS at, like, 6:05, and then, you know, Vince had it, and then it switched over. So it is a little confusing. But for this project, it's basically Jim Crockett Promotions, and then when Turner bought it out in December of 1988.
Yep.
And Jim Crockett Promotions, they only owned Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And then there's the UWF distinction, which we are going to clarify, but that's kind of an exception. But yeah, just stick with what's on the network for Mid-Atlantic. From 1981 to, I think it goes up to, what, 1985 when they started calling it just NWA.
Yep.
And then, you know, that includes, like, Starrcade 83, mm-hmm. Starrcade 84, The Final Conflict, which I don't know if it's actually recommended yet, but it does need to be recommended. The Final Conflict cage match, so all that, and then of course, you know, it gets way easier, of course, once Turner buys it in 1988, and then it's just WCW. So
right, and you, one of the questions has come up like three or four times. They do count as the New Japan like super shows and stuff that they do.
Yes, yes. So those were joint shows that were done together, and in the case of here, were shown stateside on pay-per-view, so that would count.
And same with When Worlds Collide and Collision Korea, like all that stuff. I mean, those are WCW shows. So this would be a lot of fun. I mean, I think this is an interesting spot. And I, what I didn't realize at the time was that this was kind of an abandoned Death Valley Driver message board project that never really finished up. So I think there's some appetite there from folks that were involved. At least that's what's come across to me so far.
Yeah, so, I mean, the 80s, you know, Death Valley Driver did a series of the 80s, best matches of the 80s, and they started with WWF, and that was kind of done, you know, our buddy Bix sort of spearheaded most of that. So it was a little odd the way that one was done, but that was the first one, so that was kind of the litmus test, and then Will kind of took the reins and did the lion's share of the work going forward after that. And so they completed Mid-South, Memphis, World Class, All Japan, New Japan, Other Japan, Lucha, AWA. So really the, you know, the hugest, the biggest territory that was not covered in that project was, of course, Crockett and the NWA. So it'll be exciting to actually get kind of a definitive list. You know, this will include, of course, 80s and 90s and even a couple years of the 2000s. But this will give a lot of those 80s matches some representation. And, I mean, I don't know, you know, what's going to come out. You'll see the results. What was the number one match of the WWF project? I think that was kind of known what it would be going in, and that came to fruition, but I don't really know what will be the number one match on the on this one. I don't know if it'll be a Flair Steamboat, Flair Sting. I mean, there's a lot of options. It's gonna be interesting to see what it is. I really don't know.
And admittedly, you know, that project was ominous. It was voluminous. It, you know, there was a lot to it.
Right.
The WF one. I mean, we were ranging from what, the 70s, 60s, 70s, well, all the way.
60s for some.
Right. Yeah. All the way till today. You know what I mean? Right. Like, that was a lot. So, this is a much more finite group. 20 years, it's not as much overwhelming amount of TV and pay-per-view, and it's not current. Like, there's not more being at, you know, it's closed as of March of 2001.
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was honestly tough with the WWF project. That was two things. Is one, like, how do you rank the current stuff? Because that got difficult because, I mean, there's such an emphasis put on work rate now compared to back then. You know, like in the late 80s, it's crazy, the discrepancy. And then also, yeah, I mean, just the whole volume. So, I mean, I watched around, I guess, 300 matches for the WWF one. But my cutoff, and with that such a large volume of stuff, my cutoff was so high that, I mean, there were so many great matches. There just wasn't much room for, like, you know, that match that kind of really comes out of left field that you really want to champion, that ends up making your list at like number 92, but you're so happy that it made it in. There wasn't many of those on the WWF list. I had maybe one or two throughout the whole list. And I mean, I don't think, like, I mean, I think you can certainly get to 100 great matches from this Crockett stuff really easily, but I do think there would be more opportunity for some of those kind of diamond in the rough picks, or some of those great studio TV matches that you've never seen that might end up making your final list.
Yeah, we mixed it up for this one too. Like, we're not doing nominations because it just gets unwieldy with matches. I mean, this, like, include what you want to include just because it wasn't nominated and seconded and third. I mean, I think that process wasn't necessary. What we're doing is on our Facebook group page, which is facebook.com/GWCW matches. If you want to join, you can. And I mean, there's already great conversation there, but also basically we're just recommending matches, right? So people are just going in there and posting links and video and little write-ups. So there'll be a lot of that going on for this project. So you don't have to, it doesn't have to be a nominated match, but we're recommending lots of stuff because, and that's why we gave everyone a full year to really dive in, because I know not everyone is well-versed and grounded in WCW, at least to that extent, to just rattle off their top matches. So we wanted to allow additional time for research. And I think we're going to have a lot more content this year as well. Like, we got some good people on board, you know, to do podcasts and whatnot. So we're looking forward to that. I'm hoping it'll be a much more active and engaged project this year.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. Speaking of active and engaged, Chad, we are now 20 minutes in. So why don't we go ahead and dive in to our – we only have one show tonight. That's why we are a little more lax with getting going. But Raw is off. The WWF is preempted by the dog show here in 1996. So we've already gone over their Go Home episode for In Your House, which will be our next podcast. We'll cover In Your House 6. But tonight we have the fallout from Super Brawl here on Nitro from February 12th, 1996.
I mean, I was wanting to look to see if I could see. Oh, so the 1996 Westminster
who won?
Bested show, a Cocker Spaniel.
I so, called it.
There you go.
I called it.
Yeah. I guess Newsday has this. Oh, I'm sorry, a Clumber Spaniel. I don't even know what that is.
Sounds like a dog Brad has.
This will want me to subscribe to Newsday to read all about this. So I don't think
Neil Best ripping it.
Yeah, so I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, good for it.
I can't believe that dog show was already 24 years ago.
Right. So Nitro has the wrestling eye all to itself tonight. They're live from Tampa.
It's funny, too, because like even though I was a WWF diehard and I loved the competition, there was probably like a twinge of relief on this night for me, you know, about, I can just watch Nitro, just chill. Yes. I don't have to flip back and forth, record one, hit the, you know, and like, it's just, okay, just one tonight.
Yes. So we kind of got a weird, just a little bit of a different intro where they did an overhead of the city kind of coming in. And we learned from Eric, they're coming from the Florida State Fair. And he said that was courtesy of George Steinbrenner. Who he informed us was in attendance tonight. So I guess catchers and pitchers were about to report. So he was, I guess, down there for that. Or he has his residence down in Tampa, right? Anyway.
Yeah, that was his home. And that was always like the running thing, right? There was the Yankee management was split. Like there were members of the upper management in New York. And then there was the Tampa compound with Steinbrenner and a few Billy Connors and a few others. So that was a big thing. Yeah. That's where the spring training was. And obviously Steinbrenner is also really good friends with Bobby Heenan and a known wrestling fan.
So then Pepe tonight was wearing a red bandana, red glasses, and then also had like a headset on, which was also red. Mongo was shocked at Elizabeth's actions last night, so we go right in.
By the way, they tell us. I'm surprised that they didn't dress up Pepe and like take a shot of the dog show.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
like he's prepped for the show or something. Yeah, surprised they didn't make that joke.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah. Bischoff. Speaking of clothing, though, Bischoff has like this souped-up Canadian tuxedo on. Like he's got the denim shirt, the jeans, and then he's got a leather vest over the denim shirt, just like really going all in tonight.
Ready for Sturgis already. Bobby does say with a woman involved, you never know what they're thinking. So we have some misogynistic comments from the brain. Then they show us the classic still shots, which was always great to make you want to order the replay. Mm-hmm. Just still shots of the Sullivan, Pillman, Anderson debacle, I guess is what we ended up calling.
Are you surprised they're highlighting that?
I was a little surprised. I mean, they did at least kind of retcon it by saying, you know, a lot of people are talking about what Pillman did, so I guess that may have had some like Prodigy buzz or whatever the day of. I don't know.
Like today on Prodigy was hyping it up.
Yeah.
Well, now AOL was around at this point. It was probably in the chats. Okay. I mean, I was on AOL at this point, or I was just about to be anyway. It was right on WrestleMania 12, I think I got on. So
And then we do see clips from our double main event. So we have Savage versus Flair, Giant versus Hogan. Eric called Giant versus Hogan a death match.
which death rust?
Yeah, maybe death to the viewer, but nobody else.
And also CompuServe would have been around at this point, by the way. Grandstand, WCW. Or whatever.
Yes, of course.
They had they went all in on they whiffed, which I feel like is actually not like them. Like I feel like they were actually more ahead in the technology area in the 90s, but they were all in on CompuServe, whereas WWF was all in on AOL. Like,
right,
WWF didn't have much of a presence on CompuServe. WCW's hub was on there and they had their chats and stuff, but that did not last. So WWF was ahead of the game with them on AOL.
Big mistake there. Eric informs us that Loch Ness and Hogan did not touch when we see the steals of Loch Ness, so they're saving that matchup for us. And then Mongo says that the headset's on Pepe because he doesn't know what's going to happen backstage, and I guess he wants to listen in to see if anything breaks. So,
do you think,
basic rundown?
Do you think, I guess they were planning for like a Hogan Loch Ness thing, like he was going to be the next monster for him to slay? I mean, it clearly was, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the very least they were planning a big Nitro match between them, but I would guess I would guess they were probably thinking, Slamboree or something in that area. They
next
were going
monster. Yeah.
Yeah, have the big showdown, but really stupid. We'll see when Loch Ness gets dropped fairly quickly, I'm guessing, after the next pay-per-view, but we'll see how quick that happens.
Jimmy Hart.
So then we kind of roll into our first match, which is Hugh Morris versus Macho Man. I thought that was smart to have Savage kind of start out the show.
Yes.
Keep the crowd hot. And then they did a cool bit where, Macho Man doesn't have his hat or his robe on. Mm-hmm. He kind of comes out looking real disheveled, looking around. They talk about him being a man possessed and how he doesn't have the pomp and circumstances he normally would. So
they also announce a big match for next week.
Yes, we get the rematch. He gets his rematch with Flair next week on Nitro. So I talked about in the last show, they've had three matches we've seen so far. This will be number four.
It feels like 50.
Yeah, hopefully they're gone. I mean, I think it's just these pairings. Like, it's been Dungeon or Doom. I mean, once Sting really kind of went away with Luger, mm-hmm. and they're in the tag stuff now, it really feels like since the beginning of the year, it's just been Hogan, Savage, Flair, Anderson, and then like the Dungeon of Doom kind of lurking around too.
Yep.
And it's just like enough of the, I mean, we're 2 months in. So.
Right. Yeah. I think it's at least one more month of it, and I think we start to get some change. But they really went to the well. I mean, for dream matches that we didn't get a lot in the past, like they really just emptied the fucking tank on them. Like Savage Flair, Hogan Flair, like all of them are just thrown at us quickly here, rapid fire. They must have been drawing all right though. They're, quarter hours and stuff, whatever, but for them to keep going back to it.
Yeah, well, the house show business of Flair and Savage around this time was really good. So that is one reason they kept them together, is the house show business was excellent with them on top.
Yeah.
So I know that was a main selling point.
Well, and the
point.
Angle gets hot, as we'll see. Like, the feud was good, but it heats up quite a bit with the direction
right.
we go.
Turn, yeah. So Savage starts right away with punches and kind of grinding on Hugh Morris. A lot of clobbering on his part. Morris is able to get a thumb to the eye and takes over. But his offense, again, was just mostly punch and kick, not much there. It does heat up as Savage takes the offense to the outside post Hugh Morris. Hugh Morris is able to block a suplex, hit one on Savage. He misses a charge in the corner, and now Savage is back on offense. So they had a lot of back and forth. Ended up with Hugh Morris missing the no laughing matter. And then Macho Man comes back, scoops him up, hits a slam, and then the elbow drop. But he wasn't satisfied with just one. He goes back up and hits another one. So... I thought it was fun character work showing Savage, really pissed off after what happened last night and unhitched, but I mean, as I've spoke before on this podcast, I don't really like Hugh Morris. This match wasn't exactly a feat in athleticism with all the punches and kicks, so I didn't think much of the match itself, so I only went a star and a half here.
Yeah, I went too. I mean, it was pretty basic. I liked the Savage stuff, like you said, how he comes out just pissed off and focused and aggravated and just goes right at Hugh Morris like an animal, just like mauling him. Morris gets a little bit of offense, not much. Bischoff does mention that the WCW Baywatch episode is finally airing on February 19th. That was taped back in July, and Hogan, Savage, Flair, and the Dungeon of Doom have been feuding since then. Never mind, since we've been watching. But I mean, really, because they fight, you know, Vader was involved too, but Sullivan and them attack Hogan at the beach during the taping and all that, and that was during Bash at the Beach that was filmed. So they aired that, and you can listen to more about that in an old episode of Letters from Center Stage. Me and Alan broke down the Baywatch episode, which is one of my favorite podcasts I've ever done, so that's a lot of fun. If you want to check that one out. Savage teases that third elbow after the bell, but Hugh Morris dodges it. It was basically a squash. I thought the pacing was pretty good, a lot of aggression, and Savage is pissed. And this is a good use. If you're going to use Morris, just having a squash by Savage isn't the worst thing, because you get the tie into the Dungeon, which is obviously a big feud, and he's a guy that can just take a loss like this. It doesn't really matter. So this is a good opening.
Now, he does try to hit a third elbow afterwards, but Hugh Morris rolls out of the way. So Savage then says that he wants a piece of Flair. So we get that. Go to, well, we got the WCW magazine, of course. They're still talking about World War III. So, I mean, how old?
It's such an outdated ad. I swear this ad runs for the next 2 years, I think.
I'm just interested when they'll go to the next month, because it's like we're still talking about what happened in November. But
was this one with Sting, like, pops out of the magazine?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the
Wow!
The kid morphs into Sting, and he's like, I gotta see this. Gene interviews Steve Grissom, the race car driver. Gene says he's excited about the car. They show footage from Daytona. It has the kind of classic purple and gold paint job on the car, the WCW on the side. I did look up Grissom's finish in the 1996 Daytona 500. Do you want to give a guess?
So how many people? How many racers?
43 cars, usually.
I will say he finished 37th.
27th. So, you know, middle of the road. He was involved in a wreck really early on. So, do you have any thoughts on this great interview here?
No, just a puff piece. I was actually surprised it did it here. Like, this is their chance to really, like, capture the imagination with ZWF off.
Yes.
And I feel like they should have... Not that this isn't a good episode, I think it is, but I feel like they should have really went all out to impress, and like we just didn't need a chat with... I know Daytona was happening this weekend, so I get it, but I just feel like something we didn't need to waste time with, given where we're at with all this. I think it should have been more, maybe throw this on Saturday night or something like that.
Yeah. Then we get the big in-ring debut of Loch Ness, as he's facing American Male, Scotty Riggs.
Freak show match.
Bobby says Riggs should get in the race car and get out of town. Eric, of course, drops where the big boys play when Loch Ness comes out. And Mongo follows that up by saying, have mercy, Miss Percy, which is pretty bad. It's like, all right. Riggs tries to fire a wave of punches, but Loch Ness, like, moves out. And then they botch a power slam really bad, where Riggs was coming off the top and Loch Ness was trying to kind of float him over into a power slam and lost him. So it was did not look good. He then gives an elbow drop, what looked even also horrendous, and does give one more elbow drop. So, I mean, all Loch Ness did was move out of the way, botch his power slam, and give two pretty wimpy-looking elbow drops for the pin. Meanwhile, the crowd was completely dead for all this, so I gave this a dud. I did not like this at all.
I just went half star. I mean, whatever. It was just a squash. But the I mean, they really shit all over his physique, his hygiene, and everything else. His teeth as he's coming out. Just ripping all over him. But, yeah, I mean, Riggs tries, but it just goes nowhere. Bischoff at least puts over his drop kicks. The worst spot was when Loch Ness drops and Cone off the top. He just kind of flops on his legs.
Yeah, yeah, awful. Yeah. I mean, that looked bad. That, again, got some audible laughs, so that's never good.
And then the elbow. It's sloppy. Just sloppy. Just like Loch Ness. Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like, whatever. Bring him in. Why not give it a shot? But it's just, in this era, like, it's not going to work. It's just, he's not, we're past the spectacle stuff now that you could have weekly TV and multiple shows and all this stuff. Like, if this is 10 years earlier and he can go work a loop with Hogan or something, that's one thing. But just right now, like, this just isn't going to work. He's just not, he's just going to get exposed. He doesn't have it in him to go out there and do this right now.
Yeah. I mean, we're just beyond this. I mean, like, that can't be right. I was just looking at Cage Match. They have a match from him from 1967. Surely that's not.
Well, how old is
correct,
he?
But I don't know. Let me look it up. But I mean, they do have stuff from 77, which I would say is accurate from joint promotion. So, I mean, yeah, he's 20 years in at this time.
He was born in 46. He could have wrestled in 67. It would have been 21.
Yeah, 21. So.
He died at 52 in November.
I saw that. Yeah. November 98. Yeah, sad. Okay. Well, there we go. But I've never seen, I would say, a good giant haystacks Loch Ness match, and this was not it. So
he, it looks like, I thought he just left. You know, he's around for a little bit. I guess we can cover it in the future. But I thought he just left, but it looks like he actually got diagnosed with cancer while he was in WCW, and that's why he left.
Oh,
because then he dies of lymphoma in 98. So I guess he probably battled it for like 2 years or whatever. I don't know if it's off and on or consistently, but that's why he ends up leaving. So
yeah, so I'm looking at his cage match, and as far as in-ring action, here's what we got to look forward to: a 2 minute match next week, a 13 second match in a couple weeks, and then a 2 minute 34 second match at the pay-per-view. So we're talking about his total WCW run on TV, or at least on Nitro and pay-per-view, consisted of like 5 matches and like 6 minutes of total.
It's like Ronda Rousey in the UFC. a lot of squashes and then a loss and out. That was it.
Yeah, he's out.
The Ronda Rousey of WCW. There is, like, he does at least serve like value of one match that I remember putting someone over. But he does turn face. I know that.
Yeah.
He's going to get the Jimmy Hart, you is a face Hart.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's getting bad. There's definitely some cracks in the armor here of WCW. Gene does an interview. He says he has a lot of questions for Elizabeth. Elizabeth comes out with her new black leather look. She debuts that here. I don't know. I've always liked this promo where a woman and Elizabeth wheel out a gurney that has a bed sheet over it. And then all of a sudden, Flair just pops out in a suit and sunglasses. He goes, "I was just taking a little cat nap," and says it's not easy being the Nature Boy. I do equate this to how he was acting in that Thunder in Paradise episode. This is like the same wavelength as how he was. So he starts walking the aisle with both girls and showing off, and then he starts talking about Space Mountain, has some parting shots for Savage and Hogan. Then the microphone goes over to Elizabeth. She says she has something to say. She says she walked behind Randy for 7 years and never opened her mouth. She talks about the divorce and her taking half in the divorce, and last night she took it all. And then she says Savage looks up to Flair. So, I mean, this was probably her longest promo ever.
Outside of the Rona Barrett interview at WrestleMania 6.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot the sit down. But, yeah, all I could think of her saying in WWF is basically, "Oh, yeah," when she gets proposed to. But, I like this for what it was. I mean, it establishes Flair as like this playboy with these two hot girls, and, you know, Elizabeth was never that charismatic on the microphone, but she at least did get her point across. And I mean, her talking about the divorce, that was pretty dark and kind of hit close to home. So
yeah, no, I think she did fine here. Like, I think this worked well. Flair was great, just classic Flair. I like too that he's kind of moved on to the MILFs, you know, like now he's a little bit older and classier Flair. He's not out there with like 20-year-olds anymore. He's got these fine wine out there with him. It's a good gimmick. Like, now we got the Horsemen. We haven't really had like a good solid Horseman in a while, with all four of them, right? Because what do we have? I mean, we had the 93 face Horsemen.
Yeah, there's the Roma version, and then really when they started coming back in 95, but a lot of it was like by association. So once Benoit came in, it really kind of started establishing themselves.
So we got a real good classic heel Horseman, right? Probably the first classic heel Horseman since like 1990 or whatever, right? I mean, so
since Flair. Since Flair left in 91.
So we got that, and now we get the women with them, which is kind of a new touch, right? Because they always had J.J. Dillon, and they always had women, but not like dedicated women with them, you know, like to show off and as arm candy, I don't think, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, woman was the closest in 90, but yep.
And Baby Doll, I guess. Well, she was gone by the time the Horseman formed, right? Was she faced by then?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, she just had turned face around that time, so yep.
Yeah, so the first time. So they got two, like, high-profile women in the group. So the group is expanded. It's a nice setup that they have right
now. It's a different aesthetic, yeah.
Yeah, so I like what they got going on. Arn's the grizzled veteran. You got the Wild, Loose Cannon, and Pillman. You got the Machine, you know, killer, and Benoit. And then you got the just the Playboy top alpha dog and Flair with his bronze.
Right.
So I think it's just, it's like a perfect setup. I like this incarnation of the Horseman. And it's a perfect hook now. We're teasing it already that Liz left Savage and she's got his cash, right? And now she's going to bang Flair. And there's a nice subtle, you know, tilt back to 92, right? When Flair claimed that him and Liz were together. They denied it, but now look, here we are. They're together and rubbing it in Savage's face. So there's a nice like callback to that era too.
Yeah. It's kind of come full circle. Yeah. So it was good to see. Our next match is Devon Storm coming out versus Conan. Storm had a brown mullet, which looked horrendous, and some green black tights that kind of look like the Rockers. Like some straight out of the Marty Jannetty collection.
I think this is the match Shawn Michaels watched before Survivor Series 2002 when he comes out with the bob haircut and the fucking shit brown tights.
Man, he looked so different from what Crowbar ends up looking like. Like completely unrecognizable pretty much.
Well, he goes through a few different looks because he has he does like the blonde hair too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he has like the blonde short crop hair for a little bit, yep.
Because I think he makes a quick stop in WWF as well, like during the cruiser, the fake cruiser era in 97, like the tournament and all the stuff there.
We'll have to see. Do you think he makes it to Raw?
I think he did, because I think he's in the tournament.
Nice. There we go. So we'll be seeing more of him. But I was kind of interested to see this match because, you know, as we talked about the Super Bowl match with One Made Game that I really despised. So I didn't know what we'd have here. I mean, what have you thought of Devon Storm as a worker overall? Did you, what's kind of your opinion? Anything positive, negative?
I mean, I liked him as Crowbar. Like, I thought he was engaging in that role. You know, he was kind of wild, diving all over the place. And he just, I thought he was, he really carried David Flair through those later years. And the stuff with Daphne was good. Like, she was really good. So I thought he was a quality act later. I don't know much of his stuff beyond, like, the Crowbar stuff. But
yeah, I mean, like, I've seen some of his indie stuff, and it's okay.
I think he's a competent worker that could bump. I mean, right? That's pretty much what
he is. Yeah, I mean, like, he's one of those guys that when he came on at the time, he was, you know, a lot of the stuff he was doing was kind of over the top and looked good, but it doesn't necessarily hold up the best in like 2019 eyes, but we'll see how it goes. But so right away he gets a chair, does a triple jump senton, which looked good there. Then he sits cold head on the chair, jumps off the step. So already this was an improvement over the one man gang match and had more action.
And I will say this too, though, they hyped Storm quite a bit before the match. Like Bischoff brags about the new talent they're bringing in. He calls him suicidal and how brash he is. Like, he's not just like a job guy here. Like, it seems like they're actually giving him a little bit of a push, or at least some background. I don't know if they were planning on using him seriously or not, but that is the one thing I like about Bischoff in this era of Nitro. Like, no one's a jobber. Like, they give story or interest, you know, whether it's him, Tanay, eventually, whoever is involved, Tony, like, they try and give a little bit of flavor to some of these guys. They're not just faces.
Yeah, they basically presented him like how they did Sabu when he came in. I mean, the same type of hype, like, oh, this guy's crazy, or... I don't know if it was Eric, or I think it was Mongo or somebody, or maybe even Bobby was like, oh, talk to this guy in the back. And, you know, he said, there's nothing he won't do to win the title. So, man, it was good hype coming in.
I did like how they used the old picture of Conan before the break with the long hair.
That was all gone. So Conan's able to grab him and powerbombs him. They go back in the ring. Good clothesline by Storm. He's getting some reaction from the fans, which is nice. He does a somersault Rana that looks good and a head scissors, an arm drag, and Eric's kind of lost with all this action. He can't really keep up and call the moves with the flurry. Then we get a wheelbarrow suplex, and the crowd's actually cheering for Conan, so this is impressive. He hits a one-arm power bomb that got a two-put count. Then we are shown George Steinbrenner in the crowd, so he's looking on. The match slowed down a little bit as we got a little bit of leg submission stuff, which really didn't lead to anything. And then it got
even worked in an old Indian deathlock in there from Conan.
Yeah, it got a little repetitive after that too for me, where basically what happens is Devastorm kept going for big moves and Conan kept power bombing him to get out of it. So I mean, he does a springboard back kick, but he goes for the powerbomb to the outside, and Conan's able to roll through with a Rana, and then he gives two really weak kicks and goes for a Rana again from the top rope, but Conan turns that into the powerbomb and ends up winning. So, I mean, you know, this was a showcase match, and as we said, like, I've not been impressed at all with Conan so far, and I did think Storm's strategy was pretty wonky here, and some of the execution wasn't too smooth, but I mean, maybe it was just coming off the heels of that awful match the night before, but I just thought this was so much more effective, and I kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt to at least have an exciting match that did put Conan over, so I ended up going 2.5 here. I mean, it's a sloppy 2.5, but it was a fun match to watch.
I went 2.5 as well. Bischoff also during this match says they weren't really inferring last week that WWF caused the power outage. They were just jokes on the hotline.
Oh, here we go.
Because they did make those jokes, remember? We talked about it.
Yeah, right.
And I guess they joked on the hotline too. And they says people take things too seriously. So I'm pretty sure that I think I remember. I don't know if we talked about it here or what else, whatever. But I think WWF sent them a letter. Like,
got
bitching.
Cease and desist.
Bischoff has to do the public apology. I'm sure the lawyers forced him to, but it was pretty funny. You pretty much hit all the high spots on this one. It was interesting and different, which, again, is one of the Nitro hallmarks at this point. Like, different stuff. You're not going to get a lot of paint-by-numbers matches. It's all very varied and very random. I thought the open and the finish were hot, but that middle was definitely sluggish. If they could have kept the heat up, this could have really popped as, like, a little bit of a hidden gem. They just couldn't keep it going the whole time. But I enjoyed it, and Conan definitely rights the ship after that disaster at Super Bowl. So I went 2.5, and it was good to see him kind of get back on track.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. I was happy with it. So yeah, good little match. And then, I mean, they go from break and they went right to the main event. So here we go, right to our big main event, which is Hulk Hogan versus Arn Anderson, a first time singles match. They'd really only ever been in, I think, two matches. Well, I mean, they were in World War III and the Royal Rumble 1989. But before this, they'd only been in two tag matches so far. So their first ever singles match with each other, which is a pretty big deal, pretty big match. Woman's out with Arn So she seconds him. And Hogan still has his big bandage on over the eye.
Everything has to be exaggerated and extra with him. Nothing can just be basic. Like, he's going to have the gigantic fucking mummy thing on his head.
So Hogan chases Arn out right away. I mean, Hogan's offense. You know, you ragged on me about that drop toe hold that Hulk had a couple months ago, but I'm begging for that with what he's throwing out now, because it is just... I mean, in this match, he literally starts off by raking the eyes of Arn, punching him in the corner, doing a corner punches, then doing, like, Arn is, of course, stooging. He's doing his stooging selling, which is entertaining, but, you know. I mean, like, one time, Arn's laying belly first on the mat, and Hogan stands over him and does a back rake. I mean, it's just the worst offense. Like, it's
weak. He's just in this rut right now. Like, just across the board, character-wise, promo-wise, wrestling-wise, he's just in this weird spot. You could tell he's just, I don't know if he's just burnt or what's going on. And also, Bischoff says he has, it's a ballistic reaction for Hogan, but it was definitely muted and kind of mixed when he came out. But Bischoff makes it like it's like WrestleMania 3 when he's coming out. And he also talks about all the celebrities that have been part of WCW lately. So as Hogan kind of preens during that.
Yeah, just it feels like Hulk's offense right now is kind of like the offense you could only do with your wrestling figure, because it's so limited in their movements. You know, like, you can only do so many things with the old wrestling figures. I mean, he can't do nothing. So it's just like mummified. Hulk does send Arn to the outside. Arn regroups a little bit. Arn goes for a pile driver on the outside. We did get a slingshot into the post.
I thought that was a good bump.
Yeah, that was cool. And then Hogan posts his shoulder and rams his arm against that. I mean, Hogan takes like 95% of this match, which is annoying. Arn finally gets a little bit of offense, has a headbutt to the midsection, goes after that big eye, the damaged eye. And then Flair struts out with Liz, so he's out there now. Arn gets the spy buster, but that causes the Hulk up. I thought that was a mixed reaction on the Hulk up, where, you know, a couple of cheers, but also some boos. Hogan then puts Arn in the figure four. That puts Flair, comes into the ring, and Hogan rolls him up for the pin, you know, for a pinfall, a phantom pinfall. Woman has some salt. Hogan's threatening to punch her, and then she just rears back and throws salt right in his eyes. So he looks like a dummy. On the other side of the ring, Liz is giving her long boot to Arn. He whacks Hogan with it and picks up the pinfall. Mm-hmm. So a big, big pin for Arn over Hulk Hogan here. This is kind of one of those things where the finish made the match for me.
Yes.
And, Arn sold well and did well throughout this match. I thought Hogan was pretty dreadful throughout this match. So, I enjoyed the celebration here. I guess we could get to the post-match shenanigans, but for the match itself, I ended up going 2 3/4
whole thing. I went the same. Bobby was good here, too, because he shits on Hogan a lot, and then he's, like, ripping him for not covering. We get Steinbrenner yucking it up in the crowd while they're fighting. And then... interesting point. Hogan pulls the bandage off his own eye, and the announcers question him doing that. Like, why would you do that? Basically, I mean, I don't know why not. I don't think it's really doing anything. But there you go. So Arn, and that allows Arn to go to the eye. I like the whole finishing sequence. I thought it was, because we're already establishing now what the crew is going to be like. Right? We got Woman. We got Liz. They're all running interference. We get the high heel. That becomes a running gag now for a bit. But I thought all of that really played well to show what this new horseman group is going to do to fuck with Hogan and Savage and anyone else in their way. I thought, you know, there was a good heat segment, you know, mixed in there. A lot of Hogan offense. Good heel finish, I thought, like we said, plays out the storyline. So I was standard Hogan TV stuff. Like you said, he's hurting. But the finish was well done. And it's, you know, it's pretty momentous. Like, Hogan doesn't take a lot of TV losses. And it wasn't clean, sure, but... Like, Arn Anderson pinning Hulk Hogan on TV is a pretty big deal, even with all the bullshit involved. So that's a pretty historic moment, and one that would be talked about for a while. The Arn Anderson pinned Hulk Hogan. They would use that one for a bit. So,
Yeah, I mean, he would throw that up, you know, Hogan would in some interviews, like, oh, I'll let Arn beat. I mean, he did take so much of the match, it looked kind of weird, you know, like, I mean, he took 90%, 95% of the match, and then he ends up losing, but I guess that's just the way the structure is. What do you think about Nick Patrick as a referee? Pro, anti, where do you stand on him?
I don't know. I think he's a good character when he does the heel stuff later.
Mm-hmm.
I think just when he's trying to be a straight referee, he's like just a little over the top. I never liked the side count where he lays on his side and counts. I always thought it was kind of weird.
I think he got some unnecessary shitting on the Genie in the Gym, the latest episode.
I've not listened yet.
Yeah, some big crapping on from Genie.
I don't think he's worth crapping on. I think he's
A lot of Nick Patrick hate for some reason, and they like Tommy Young, which makes no sense.
No,
to me,
Tommy Young is super annoying.
Yeah, Tommy Young is way over the top. So yeah, I mean, I do like Pee Wee Anderson better than Patrick, but.
I think he was their best. I think Anderson was the best WCW.
Yeah, player. I think Pee Wee is the best, but I'm also a Patrick Mark. I thought he does good, and he is great when he becomes the heel later down the line.
What are your feelings on Mark Curtis?
Very good. Yeah. Okay. I forgot about him. Yeah, he's very good because I think of him as a Smoky Mountain guy first. But yeah, he's up there too.
He's good. He was a little too over the top for me too, like with the jumping in the air and like.
Yeah, he could really like if somebody did a suplex and he'd like.
He'd cringe in the corner and stuff. Yeah, like,
yeah, it could get a little much.
I remember at the time really not liking him, like in the 90s. I've come to appreciate him more now. Like at the time, I really didn't care for him to the point where I actually, when he died, I felt real bad because of how much I did not like him in the 90s. But I still think Anderson was the best. And he's actually even more of a sad story. He's to do all the stuff where they fire him and all that, and then he actually dies from cancer, too. It's like
right in front of his kids. I can't wait till we get to that segment. That was, like, probably, honestly, one of my top 10 wrestling TV moments from the 90s when they canned him. Because I just always remember, like, you know, he comes out there to beg for his job with his family, and it's Hall. He's like, what is this Family Feud? It's like such a funny line.
Bit of shit all over him.
No, they just kill that guy, and like Eric tells him he's fired. They like laugh in his face. It's so deplorable.
It's like Jason Garrett begging Jerry Jones to get the job from Randy Anderson.
Oh, man. But then we get a quick post match. Hogan comes back and gets his heat, of course, immediately.
Obviously.
So he double head knocker for Arn and Flair. He gives the big boot to both. Macho's on the outside. Flair chases out and goes to the announce booth. He starts ranting in the announce booth. Then Hogan goes to the announce booth with Macho. He kind of clowns old Bobby, chases him out. And then Okerlund's out there,
mm-hmm.
which made no sense. I mean, I guess for the live crowd to hear what he was saying, but. I mean, he was talking into the headset, and it's like Okerlund was just hanging out. So a really bad Hogan promo that ends this, where he basically says, no more Mr. Nice Guy around here. So,
But he's so fake and all. It's
we do have Mr. Nanny, but no more Mr. Nice Guy. So.
And he calls Flair Pee Wee Herman for some reason.
So bad.
He's just like so over the top. I mean, Savage is like trying, you know, and Hogan's just like, that's it, you big, stinky, nasty son of a gun, and I'm going to get you. And then he tells Savage to get his money and his house back. Hogan says he'll be the new enforcer. So in a way, they're actually like, indirectly, they probably weren't meaning it, but it almost feels like Hogan's flipping him and Savage in a way. Like Savage is the top guy for you with Flair, and Hogan's dealing with Arn, which feels a little different. I don't know if they meant to do it that way. That's how it comes across. But yeah, I think this was a good wild segment. It's just that Hogan is so fucking annoying in it. But it, like, the Flair part's well done, and I always love Bobby like scampering as fast as he can to get out of there.
Yeah, he was all mad getting out of there. So, and that's how they end. I mean, they end with Hogan yelling, so we fade to black off of that.
So, all right, let's do awards, and then I want to talk about if they did what they should have done on the show. So match of the night, Hogan Arn for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I actually thought it was pretty close between that and Conan, of all people. But, yeah, I gave it to Hogan Arn.
Post-match of Hogan Arn for a moment.
Yeah, I mean, we really didn't have anything else, so I guess... no, I'm changing that. I'm going with the Flair promo when he pops out of the gurney. Good. Yeah, I'm going with that.
MVP and with Arn. I mean, that's a huge win for him.
Yeah, it's a big win for him. So, yeah, I'll give it to Arn as well.
All right, some commentary. He does have a funny aroma about him, Bobby Loch Ness. That's like the car jack comes out from under the car and you were under it, Mago. This guy's in a soap opera in Mexico, Bischoff. The young and the ridiculous, Bobby. These guys are moving furniture like a moving company, Mongo. They're going to beat on each other like yesterday's stepchildren, Mongo. I love when he mixes all the metaphors. Idiot. Yesterday's stepchildren. What about today's?
Okay.
We get enough heels at ringside to start a shoe company, Mongo. No, he didn't mean it as heels. I think he meant as high heels, but it was still a funny. Missed that. And then the only shots fired I had was talking about WWF not causing the power outage.
Yeah. No, they kept on their pretty good behavior, mm-hmm. you know, having nothing unopposed. So.
Well, I think this is it seems to be their cycle, right? They'll go hot, and I think they get a call probably from the lawyers because WWF bitches, and they have to back off for a couple weeks. It seems to ebb and flow based on how things are going. Like, if WWF hits them hard, they hit hard back. Like, in the next one in a few weeks, for us it'll be a few weeks, but for the next episode, Bischoff goes in much harder. I can tell he probably got pissed at whatever billionaire Ted drops the next one. No debuts because we had Loch Ness at Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And
Devin Storm.
Storm. Right. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Put him down. For a grade, I went 6 out of 10. What did you have for a grade?
I'm going 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
And I guess we can go into our overall thoughts. I mean, I just think, like, there's too many gaps that are starting to show. Mm-hmm. Like Hogan has not been good since we started this show. But I do think he's gotten worse. Like, I think, like, the Black era was at least, you know, they were trying something different. It didn't work, but it was maybe something a little bit different, even though he was still over the top. And I did think he at least had some decent matches at that point in time with Luger, and I don't know. I just feel like it is getting worse.
Yeah.
And I think on top of that, you know, this show didn't have, you know, like, Eddie's in Japan right now, but I feel like we're really missing him. Like, he was such a workhorse in those episodes. And, you know, we liked the hype into Super Brawl, and I just thought coming out of Super Brawl, which was a shoddy pay-per-view, they took too much of the bad elements and not enough of the good ones. I mean, there's still a lot of good stuff here. Like, Flair's good. The Horseman stuff's good. Macho's fine. The talent's there. It's just there's I think, more inconsistencies that are starting to come to the surface. And I really think this was a week where they could have, like, knocked it out of the park. I mean, you know, I don't know who was available.
Right.
But, you know, have, well, like, a too. Huge we, showcase match.
Well, we get no Pillman, no Benoit. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Eddie, no Regal. Like, there's guys that are good that could be on these shows.
Yeah, and I mean, so Regal and Belfast Bruiser were already feuding. Like, he'd already came out on WCW Saturday Night. So, yeah, I mean, get them out there, and they do, like, a 5-6 minute pull apart just slugfest, and that sets up
no Sting,
uncensored.
No Sting, no Luger.
No Luger. Yeah.
Public Enemy's been having fun, like, garbage matches. You know, you could have showcased them.
There was a lot you could have done besides Loch Ness, and I don't think we really needed Savage versus Hugh Morris either. Like, Morris is just fodder.
So that's the thing I was going to say, is that we didn't get the variety tonight, because a lot of times you kind of get that, the Hogan Savage, like, that's all, like, one. You may get an interview and then a match featuring all these guys, but we had two matches plus the interview, so it almost felt like they were the whole show. And I'm guessing in their mind at the time, they probably went that way thinking, okay, we're unopposed, let's show off all of our big top guns, right? So I'm guessing that was the thought process, so they just went all in on those guys. But, you know, what we really wanted was the variety to hook. Like, I don't know anyone that probably watched the show, if you were a Raw watcher, if you watched this, and it convinced you enough, even though Raw's been up and down itself, like, did it convince you enough to say, well, you know, WrestleMania season is coming up. Do I really want to park here and watch this, or do I want to go see what they can do for WrestleMania with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, you know?
Yeah, they got a 3.7 rating, which is a good rating, but, you know, yeah. Missed opportunities, I would say, overall.
Oh, for sure. They definitely had a good chance to hit a home run, and they hit, like, a single.
Right.
Like, it's a fine episode. You know, five for you, six for me. Like, that's a good episode. But for where they've been, you know, they've been much higher, right? We've been giving them seven, sevens and a half, eight, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
So there's definitely like a step back. And we saw the first kind of chinks at the Clash. Then we bounced back with a couple of good Nitros, and the Super Bowl was real bad. So we'll see. I mean, Uncensored doesn't have the best rep, so we'll see how we build towards that.
Yeah.
But I think this is kind of where we're going to be until like April, when we get Hogan's hiatus and then other stuff starts to percolate.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, really, honestly, like, if Hogan leaves, I'd be much more interested at this point.
Well, we don't have much more. I think he's done right after Uncensored, so.
Yeah, yeah.
We really just got a few more weeks of him, and then he's off until July, you know.
Right.
All right. So that'll do it. Lots going on at PlaceOfNation.com each and every day. Also, our feeds, PlaceOfNation Wrestling Feed, PlaceOfNation Pop. Check that out. Brand new PlaceOfNation podcast coming next week. It is WrestleMania 6. Should be an exciting one. Of course, my favorite, pretty much my favorite show of all time. So I'm really looking forward to diving into that again. I had fun rewatching it recently. New Body Press Your Luck will be coming in a couple weeks as well. We got a real Clash of the Titans lined up for episode 3. So stay tuned for that. Aaron and I will be back with a new No Holds Barred as well toward the end of the month here in January with a brand new gimmick. So hopefully everyone checked out our GWWE pay-per-view TV match list breakdown show. We went through both of our full lists, which was a good time. And a new Extreme Three-Way Dance dropped as well earlier this week. Me, Jetty, and D'Amato looking at the fallout of Hardcore Heaven 94 on ECW television. Anything you want to talk about, Chad?
No, I think that's it for me. So we're good to go.
All right, Facebook.com / GWCW matches. That's where you can get involved in the project. And also you can follow us on Facebook as well, Wrestling Warzone, if you just search that. We have our own little Facebook page where we post random stuff, and mostly at this point it's the picture for the next pay-per-view to get everyone fired up. we'll be back hopefully in the next couple weeks with In Your House 6. That should be a fun chat. It's an interesting show. Get to the hype, and then Chad will be hyped toward Mania, so we'll be hitting Mania season. We'll see how the build to 12 holds up.
I'm interested to see how they, because as we talked last time we talked WWF, I mean, there's been nothing for Brett versus John so far, so we'll see how they get there after In Your House. So there we go.
And also Undertaker Diesel is starting to take shape, which is the
All
right, that's it. Chad, GT, we're out. Smell that napalm. We'll talk to you soon. It was love at first sight, my confession. She know who she is, can't say her name, cause if I do, I won't be true to my game. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. That's for your moms, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. Yo, I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. That's for your moms, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. Now my next one, she lives out of state. I mean, the sex and conversation situation is great. Every time I hit town, we make a date. And when it's time to chill, my shorty can't wait. Now I can still remember when we first met each other. Exchange numbers, promise we won't forget each other. Go to work in school, that's cool, no doubt. That's why a nigga went that route. Uniform foot locker, shorty looking proper. She's out to get me, can't stop her. Know I had a lover, yo, still went for her. Even copped a bit of kicks on the strength for her. Yo, chatted, talked about, see you later. From that moment on, I knew that I had to date her. Couldn't conversate long, shorty had to go back to work. Something inside said, gotta work. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. I swear to God, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. I swear to God, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let none of them go. I found a good one with chicks, cause they be too demanding. Especially the ones that's never understanding. Like, where you was at, where you going, who you out with. Them same niggas I make moves and I shout with. Don't let these niggas in the street gas your head up. Like they can do better than me, plus I'm fed up. I had to tell my main chick that one time. Thinking to me short, she thought that I'm some clown nigga she could scream on and talk to. I had to run her down the line and sing a walkthrough. Now who the fuck you think you talking to, chick? Your complaint is making me sick.
Understand, man, I try to do my thing. You understand, I play the puppet on the string. Like I say, every day be careful, my friend. Good things always come to an end. So, yo, I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. That's what the moms, I got two honeys on my arms. And I don't wanna let none of them go. Yo, I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. See the roller of the stairs that I really do care, but I'm not afraid to go there. Very unselfish, ain't just I do share. You can have your fits, but you get nowhere. Work. See, we gave this air, try after try. It's a done deal, now I'm here. All I try to do is keep you satisfied. Never dealing with no others, I try. Too many threats, kid, gotta let her go. Always in your corner, gotta let her know. As I grab my boat and painfully walk out, plans about the kid we talk out. I'm feeling pain as it came to an end. I said to shorty I will always be your friend. Now if you ever need me, I will be right there. I ain't going nowhere, for real. I can't escape this life that I'm living. I'm in the mix, I'm in love with two women. It's worth the bombs, I got two honeys on my arms, and I don't wanna let